Hey, Boudreaux.
Hey, Jen.
What are you listening to this week?
Hey, super awesome listeners. This week, we've got part two of Jen's interview with Boudreaux Pardita. We jump back in with Jen's picks for her songs.
One of the signature things about the club was the pole. You know, there's a pole on stage.
Oh, yes.
And people used to, you know, musicians would hang off of it or break their instruments on it. And people would try to climb it and get hurt. And that's why we called it Bloody and Bruised, you know, because.
And it's like a, just to like give the listeners, it's like, it was like a structural pole. It wasn't like a dance pole. It was like literally
a load bearing pole that was right on the stage
that you couldn't move. That was just like right there. And I think that, you know, I think this is, you say this, and I think it might even be in the trailer. I think you talk about the pole in the trailer. And I think you also just talk about how backroom captured a time and place, right? Like if you could live a Motley Crue video,
right.
Backroom was it. And so that's, again, why I was super excited about talking with you about this genre of music and about the movie, because that time and place is such a specific one for me and so many people, you know, our age, because it hasn't really come around again, that kind of excess in a genre, or that kind of like party feel that's just like raw and rough. It's not, everything I feel like is a little prettier these days.
It's very polished. And
this one was loud and crazy. Yeah. And again, it was all about the presentation. And so the song for me that kind of sums up that presentation, and when we talk about hair bands and sleaze rock, I have this theory that I'll get into after the song as well about bands that were sort of put together for male audience and bands that were put together for female audience. Yeah. And my song is Round and Round by Rat. So this is from the Out of the Cellar album from 1984, and Rat is featured in this episode, and they're actually the only band that we're talking about that's not from Texas. These guys are from San Diego, but I believe that you said they did do a stint or two at the Back Room. And I love this song. It's not quite a power ballad, but it's close. You know, it's not an Every Rose Has Its Thorn. It's not a Home Sweet Home. It's not a Mama, I'm Coming Home. But it's still like you get some power ballad elements in it. The video is insane. If you're not familiar with the video for this song, go watch it now. I mean, the hair, the clothes, the concept, the jumps, like all of it. And I feel like Rat also sort of like squarely fits in. We don't love labels on this show. Everyone is welcome. We love all opinions. But I do believe that there's like girl metal and guy metal, right? Like Rat, Poison, Skid Row, White Lion, Cinderella. Like those were bands.
Yeah.
Like those are like my girlfriends and I, like those are who we went to see. And our boyfriends were listening to Ozzy Osbourne and Motorhead and Metallica prior to the Black Album.
Yeah.
And Pantera, you know, like that's what the guys were listening to. And so it's always funny when you have a conversation because people are like, okay, who are we going to talk about? Girl metal? We're going to talk about guy metal. And then of course you had like Motley Crue, you had Guns N' Roses, you had Whitesnake. Those were kind of universal, like ubiquitous. Everybody listened. But I'm curious to know sort of where you land on my my theory about girl metal and guy metal and where Rat falls in it.
I love glam metal. I love all of
Thank
it.
You.
And I have I've never thought it was any gender sided at all. I mean, yeah, they dressed and they put on makeup and stuff like that. But they were. I will tell you something. Molly Crue, I don't know if you can see it, but I have a huge vinyl collection. And ever since I started this film, my vinyl collection has completely exploded. And a majority of it is, you know, metal and glam metal and rock and punk and stuff like that. But, you know, shout at the devil, Molly Crue, if you actually open up that vinyl, the back photos on the back of that album, or the inner, that's what it is, the inner on the album is a quad picture of the band, and they are beautiful. That's one of the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen of Motley Crue. And I mean, Mick Mars is still a little, you know, but like he looked a little rough back then, but he's
a little rough.
Yeah, but still, I mean, I've always thought that glam rock was great. I love all those bands because, again, they did infuse kind of like we're having a good time. They weren't really taking it too seriously, but they did want to do things well. You know, they wanted to do good music and at least, you know, the stuff that they get remembered for. And I think that's also kind of why, you know, maybe people our age kind of get into vinyl and kind of collecting vinyl and collecting specifically stuff like that from the 70s and 80s and early 90s, because it is nostalgic, but it does remind you of a time of like, oh, I remember growing up listening to this stuff. Yes, that's part of it. But I think it also because it's still very much physical media that I think is starting to make a comeback, and it's not just a digital download and it's not just streaming. You know, it's these bands had to work hard to make this physical thing that people are buying in a store. And of course now you can get stuff online and whatnot, but like it says something where now there's certain bands even today that are trying to release vinyl records because they understand that, and they understand that notion of people get that these bands worked hard back then and they're working just as hard now. So yes, while digital downloads and streaming is important and it's a part of the landscape today, I think it seems a little bit easier, you know, nowadays where pretty much any kid can go on YouTube and they sing a song and they blow up. And the next thing you know, they're singing the halftime show at the Super Bowl, you know. it was a different era. And I think that's another reason. And the whole reason I said that was, I think that's another reason and of why I wanted to do this film for the people that appreciate that, you know, for the people that appreciate the glam rock and the heavy rock and Ozzy and the Rat. And, you know, and I did want to share one quick little story about Rat. We ended up doing a Penny Rock. My production company did a video promotion for Striper, Dangerous Toys, and Rat, and Stephen Piercy of Rat. And
yes.
So it was a South Texas show, and my crew and I, we drove down there. We were VIPs for the whole thing, and so we showed up to the hotel. We literally pulled up to the hotel, and there's Stephen Piercy of Rat smoking a cigarette outside, you know? And we're like, wow. And then, so right away we got our vinyl and our records and everything. We go into the lobby, we say hello to him. We're like, oh, you know, we helped put on the video promotion for this. Like, he's like, oh, cool, man. Yeah. And then my co-producer, John, he goes, hey, can I go ahead and get a picture with you? And Stephen Piercy, it's 3-4 in the afternoon. He's still in pajamas.
Nice.
And he's like, oh man, I'm not even dressed. But he still took the photo and he still kicked ass that night. He still knows how to bring it to a crowd. And so Rat, I got to give it to them. You know, Stephen Piercy especially, you know, all these years later still brings it, you know.
I'm so glad to hear that because that, again, that's what it was. For especially for like my friends and I, like I said, we'd finish school, we'd go home, we'd turn on MTV and we'd just wait for our favorite videos to come on. You know, that's what we did. That was our entertainment back then. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have, a lot of us didn't even have cable. We had you know, you were lucky. You went to the friend's house that did have cable so you could get MTV. And we just watched videos, right? Like, and so that's, you felt like you knew the band intimately. That's something else that I think is different. Like people now are like trying to get to 1 million followers. And back then, if you had 100 people at a live show, that was kind of a big deal. And those 100 people all became friends too, right? Like you'd run into the same people at shows. And so it became a thing where like, not only was it about the music, but it was about the community that was created too of people that liked the same kind of music. And that's, again, been a through line of my life, you know, since I can remember. It's been a way to form connections. And this particular genre came around and was important to me when some of those connections that lasted, that are continuing to last me a lifetime, were formed, you know, during these years, during my teen years.
And that's actually the main theme of this film, is how this establishment helped form a community that lots of people, didn't matter where you came from, what your background was, your income level, you know, how many friends you had. If you came to the back room, it was your home. And lots of people stated that in the film, you know, this place was our home. You know, when after work, that's where I went because that's where I loved to see my friends and I loved to go see the bands there. And they could, you know, you mentioned intimacy. You know, people could go up to the stage that was a little bit raised and be right there next to their rock gods, you know,
yeah.
Whether they be Jason McMaster or, you know, Marilyn Manson or whoever, you know, Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction or Layne Staley from Alice in Chains. They were right there up next to them and they could talk to them after the show. You know, it was very much a place where people felt loved and felt important because they could go up to the stage and by some kind of weird osmosis, they felt like they were a part of the show and part of their rock stars, the rock star life with their idols on stage, you know? And that's kind of a main kind of route that goes throughout the entire film is how this place was kind of a living, breathing thing, a character really. And
yeah.
How it meant so much to so many people, whether they were on the stage or behind the bar or in the crowd.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Austin's great about fostering those kinds of relationships with, you know, the artists that are from here and the venues that have been built here. And so I do love that about Austin as a city and the festivals that we have. And I do love that about some of the iconic clubs, past and present, that Austin has shared with the rest of the world. And I think that that's a beautiful segue into our final song here from a band that I know we both really love. I chose to round our playlist out today with Cowboys from Hell by Pantera. So this is from Pantera's 1990 album, Cowboys from Hell. And again, this was a surprise to me. I bet you knew this, but I did not realize that Pantera were also from Texas. They're from Arlington. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I had no idea. No idea. I have an awesome Pantera story that I always love to share. The song is like, when I think of Pantera, I think of this song, as many people do, just because it was so iconically Pantera, from like the cowboy imagery of the lyrics to, you know, the video to the album artwork, like all of it was so good. And I got to see them live when I was living in Los Angeles at the old Forum. So before they redid the Forum, I was working at DreamWorks at the time and they had a box there and they used to send out, you know, if none of the executives or filmmakers wanted to sit in the box, they'd send it out to the employees. And turns out there weren't a whole lot of studio execs in the late 90s that were interested in a Black Sabbath Pantera concert. So I got to see Black Sabbath and Pantera from the box at the Forum, the DreamWorks box at the Forum. And it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. And funny enough, it was the same show where if you were a fan of the TV show The Osbournes, there's a hilarious episode where they have a bubble machine before the show and Ozzy Osbourne's like yelling at Sharon, like, we can't have bubbles. I'm the Prince of Darkness. Like, we cannot have bubbles at this show. And it was actually the rehearsal for that Pantera Black Sabbath show where they caught that for the episode. But the concert ended up being fantastic. And I just waited for them to play this song like the whole night. I was like, please, please, please. This is one of those songs that like, I'm not sure how you could not feel this song, sure. Right? Like you might not like it, but it kind of demands that you feel it.
Yeah. Well, it's technically called, if you want to put a label on it, it was called groove metal. And,
okay.
You know, Pantera was no stranger to the back room. They had actually played there a couple times. And, you know, they had gone to the point where they were really getting big in the early 90s. And in the early 90s, they actually tried, and this is no secret, but they actually tried to put on a secret show at the back room. And they call it, instead of calling themselves Pantera, they call themselves the Cowboys from Hell. And yeah. So day of, they actually released the tickets day of, sold only day of, and, you know, a line formed around the building and down the block and down the parking lot, pretty much to the other side of Riverside. And it was one of the biggest shows, one of the biggest attended shows at the back room. It's just a fire marshal's nightmare, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. You know? It was just craziness and just utter chaos, but in a good way that everybody enjoyed. You know, the guys put on an amazing show. We actually have footage of it. And another aspect about Pantera and some of the other bands is that for the film, we actually did reenactments. So a lot of the bigger stories, we actually did reenactments. Awesome. For the film, where we actually got actors, if not the real people, but we actually got actors that looked like the actual musicians, the artists. And that was one of the things that reenacted was the Pantera Secret Show. So we actually have actors that, by God, they look like the real Pantera.
Amazing.
And it just like, and granted, you know, it's a reenactment, so it's kind of blurry. It's a little fuzzy and stuff like that. But that, you know, it's very stylized. But I thought it was important to have reenactments in the film because I wanted one. It was for two people or two sets of people. One for the people that were there that can say, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. That's kind of what it looked like. And also for the people that weren't there, you know, that were like, man, how was this craziness? Like, what did it look like? You know? So I kind of felt it was really important to kind of make that connection to both crowds. And, you know, doing the Pantera reenactment, I remember the day that we shot that it felt really magical. And we knew that we had something really good because everybody was enjoying it. I could tell, I could look at my crew and they were like, man, this looks awesome. You know, and it was great. So Pantera, yeah, I love Pantera. I'm hoping to see them, you know, this year when they go out on tour. So, you know, we should go. We should make plans to go.
We definitely should. It'll be hard for me without Dimebag. Like, yeah. I was so glad I got to see, I got to see a show with him. But yeah, I think that I love that you took the time to do these reenactments and recreate some of the shows. Because again, for people that didn't grow up in this, it's really hard to explain. Like if they watch a Poison video or a Rat video or whatever, they like in a modern kid's mind, I think sometimes they see like, oh, that's funny, or oh, that's silly. And like you said, they don't understand all the work and the craftsmanship and the image building that went into creating these mega bands of this time frame. And there were a lot of them. So you had to be good to keep up. You had to be good to stand out. You had to know how to play your instruments. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's just noise. And it simply isn't. Like, it's not just noise. These are talented musicians that are really, I think, digging so deep to come up with these kind of, like I said, like visceral, very physical performances. Nobody's just standing on stage at a metal show, like singing you a song. Like they are running up and down. They are hanging from trusses. They are breaking instruments. They are, you know, in some instances, like fighting amongst themselves. Like there are all kinds of things happening. And so I love that you took the time. You can tell to me that like that shows what a music fan you are, that you took the time to go through these reenactments so that people could not only learn about the bands and hear the music, but experience what it was like to be at a show back then. And it was unbelievable. It was, like I said, unlike anything I've ever seen before or since. Like there's nothing that is as crazy as, you know, a Motley Crue show I saw in the 80s, or, you know, a Poison concert that I went to in junior high. You know, like they were just, it was a different time.
Yeah.
Boudreaux.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then we actually asked that a lot at the end of every, you know, at the end of every interview, we asked a lot of the people, do you think the backroom would be around today if it had social media or the internet behind it, or did it have its time and place? And, you know, it was very interesting to hear how some people said, you know, no, it was, you know, it had its time and place. It's no way it could survive. But a lot of people were, you know, surprisingly saying, you know, if it had some social media push, it could probably be around today and it could maybe work. So it's very telling to hear all these different artists and even staff members and even fans, music fans that we interviewed, and journalists, music journalists that we interviewed, to get their take on, you know, where was the music back then? How did it affect people? How did it bring people together as a community under one roof? And where are we going now? You know, where is that going? You know,
yeah.
It's no secret that music is a business. It's always been a business. But it's interesting to see how that business has changed and how it's consumed. And so I think if anything, you know, if this film kind of helps do anything besides entertain and inform for a little bit, it kind of helps kind of show how hard it was to actually make it big, you know, and how hard it was,
right.
how much work it actually took to become a band, and how, and not only that, you know, it kind of how much it took to keep that going, because the Dangerous Toys, they're still playing today, you know,
yeah.
And they're still around. Pariah's not, but there's plenty of the bands that are in the movie are still playing around today. And then actually we end the film with the live performance from Dangerous Toys, you know? So
amazing.
It's been a very long trek. It's been a very, and we're still not done. We still have about 2 months of 2 months of post-production still to go, but it's on its way to being wrapped up. And, you know, we're hoping that our ultimate goal is to submit it to South by in September, October, so that it'll premiere in March of 2024. So that's our
amazing.
Goal. Yeah.
Well, I am going to be looking for my invitation to the first screening, because I'm dying to see this movie. I think you're such a talented filmmaker, and I'm so excited to see the finished version. Like I said, listeners, until we can do that, definitely go check out the trailer. And to learn more about Boudreaux, Penny Rock, and Bloody and Bruised, you can visit the website at pennyrockproductions.com. That's PennyRockProductions.com, and follow Boudreaux on Facebook or Instagram at Boudreaux Partida. That's BudroughPartida. And please be sure to follow, download, and share this show with everyone you know and all the people you'd like to know, because music is a great way to connect. And to stay informed on all things Super Awesome Mix, follow us on Instagram at Super Awesome Mix. Thanks for listening, and please join me again next week to find your new favorite song.